Llegaron los nuevos McCrispy Strips, listos para aventurarse en la mezcla de mayo ketchup, la barbecue que quedó en el fondo de la cajita, Hot Fudge Sundae y en la nueva Creamy Chili McCrispy Strip Dip. Los nuevos McCrispy Strips, ahora en McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Hi.
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 Oh, hello.
Hi.
Oh, I didn't see you there. Hi. I think your microphone's off.
Son of a bitch.
No, I think it's on.
Wait. Oh, there it is.
It's on. There it is. There it is. There it
God.
Is. There she is, folks. You wearing your own merch? Classy.
I know. Like it?
Love it. Want some more
Look
of
at
it?
This. KK brought me a throat coat.
Oh, that's so nice. I wish KK would bring me a throat coat.
I'll tell her, but she'll probably be in a minute. She'll probably take a little while.
I did a funny thing because, you know, Matt and I haven't been booking gigs this month. So it's just like been a really slow, bad month for us.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, fuck, we don't have any money. And then today I really wanted a burrito, but I knew that if he saw me order the burrito, I'd have to order him one. And I'd spend like $30 on getting like two burritos delivered. So I was like, hey, I'm going on a walk. And I walked to a burrito place and sat and ate a burrito. And I was like, I really hope he doesn't like look at the location because like he could totally see me.
Quinn.
And that I was not on a walk. I was sitting at a burrito place by myself.
Quinn, you're not cheating on your husband. You're just eating more burritos than him.
I just wanted to spend $11 instead of $30. And there's food in the fridge. It's just I have like it's fish chowder and I can't eat it, as you know.
Yeah, of course. You're without your oyster crackers. Right. Wait a minute. So did you tell him?
No, he doesn't know. I'll never tell him. I'll go to my grave not telling him that I went and ate a burrito today.
I think you should tell him.
No, I never will.
I think you have to
tell him.
It's
a secret I feel good about keeping. And I think all relationships need a little secret in them to feel exciting.
It keeps the honeymoon there. It keeps the, what is it? It keeps the energy, excitement. What is the word I'm looking for?
It keeps the burritos coming.
It keeps,
the truth.
Listen, get that burrito in you. Hello. Wait, I feel like I have some brain fog.
Oh, really? I'm totally feeling that way too. I'm feeling like, it's like the school year's getting, it's like there's always something. Like
yeah. When is the last
field
day of kids
or
school?
Like,
when is the last day?
Or like field trip or a, it's actually, COAs, they're vastly different. I think COAs is the middle, COAs is the end of June.
End of and June?
Griff's, oh, yeah.
Wait,
and Griff's
that's
is a
so
week
intense.
Earlier. Griff's a week earlier than COA. It's like Griff is 18th and Koa's 26th.
The 26th of June, like my nephew is done right now. He's done.
That's wild, man.
He's done.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting when I start school and are like, we're on these like different schedules. Like my kid's spring break is going to be different from my spring break. And I'm like, what do you do with that? I don't know the answer.
Can you miss school? Like what's your missing school policy? Because isn't it mostly remote?
No. I have like one whole day of in-persons, so I should never miss that day because I'll miss everything.
When is that? Wait, but how far away is it to get there?
It's just in Manhattan.
Oh, not bad.
It's a Manhattan campus. I have to go to the, yeah, it's going to be fine. I think that really the question is just going to be like whatever the internship ends up being because I'll have like a two-day internship in some sort of social work field that I don't really get to pick. Like it could be justice, it could be drugs, it could be kids, it could be like focused in almost any direction, and I don't really have a say, so that's gonna be really interesting.
Wait,
because I'm gonna have like this job suddenly that I don't want, that I'm not getting paid for. I mean, I get that that's what an education actually is, but it is funny.
Wait, Quinn, I'm really excited for this. What if you become like a
social
victim?
Worker? That's the plan.
Well, you want to do social work for therapy, right? You want to do...
Yeah.
That's your goal.
I think so. I mean, let's see what happens.
Let's
I'm open.
See what happens. She's open. I'm really excited. I think this is going to really... I'm really excited for the work that you're going to do. One, because I feel like I can see you do it and go, do I want to do that?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. It's really nice to have a guinea pig.
I love,
know
Thank
you
for being the guinea pig for us. I really appreciate that.
Sure. Why not?
Hey, why not?
Got to grow up someday. Might as well choose the age of 41 to start doing that.
I have to tell you, I did a show this last week and it went really well. We needed a really fun show and we got it in Leeds. And the thing that we've been asking the audiences here is like, what do you call yourselves? Because people from Newcastle call themselves Geordies. Like, there's just like really fun names. Like, was it Guildford? Let me think. No, we were in Gildies. Tamworth. We were in Tamworth.
Tampons?
And they call themselves Sandybacks.
Come on. That's even worse. Sandybacks.
It's named after a pig. And you're like, what the fuck? So I'm on stage and I'm in Leeds. And we're like, what do you call yourself here in Leeds? And they go, loiners.
Never.
Why? I was obsessed. I just kept calling them loiners. So amazing.
Yeah, of course.
Why would you not? That's fucking amazing.
That's so funny.
Leeds is loiners?
Oh, wow.
Are you high?
You're learning so much.
I'm learning so much of British culture. Really, a lot of British culture.
Is there any foods you're missing or they have all the food?
Okay, the foods I'm missing. Mexican food. They cannot do Mexican food here. I haven't even tried it. I tried it in Edinburgh and once was enough in the UK. I think it's because like, okay, their avocados here taste like water. Like they're not good at all. And I think they use like cheddar cheese in all of their like Mexican foods. It's just like not the thing. It's kind of amazing because I'm like, you don't do that well. And then also I know for a fact, and by fact, it's because I've tried it a couple times. They don't do burgers well here.
Oh, weird.
I mean, I don't think so. I mean, because I love a Shake Shack. I love a Shake Shack burger. They have a Five Guys. I haven't tried it. I just haven't gone out of my way to find a burger. But like, I don't love a thick patty. Like, I don't think you're doing me a favor with like a thick patty of a burger. Like, I don't need a meatball on a sandwich.
No.
So I don't fuck with burgers really here, which is fine because I'm like doing a show and I'm trying to eat sort of well. She says after having a cheese plate for this evening. I mean, I'm trying to like not eat like you can't have like fish and chips before every show.
You're trying to have a vegetable every now and again.
You know what? We did have on our cheese picnic plate. KK had bought some arugula, and so we were just eating some handfuls like they were chips. But you know what? Any way to get them in there? A little peppery, delish, sure. Throw it in there. Throw a little vegetable. Throw a little fiber. Come on.
Yeah, you're making me hungry.
Ooh, are you hungry? What's for dinner? Hey, not to beat a dead horse, but hey,
what's for
dinner?
I don't want to order burritos.
Didn't you have a burrito already today?
Yeah, but nobody knows that but me. It was good before. Why wouldn't it be good now? It's been hours.
Quinn, in your since we lost our jobs almost a year ago. Hey.
Yeah.
Happy anniversary to almost losing our jobs. Quinn's face. What is the thing you miss most about having money?
Ooh, I guess not having to lie to my husband about burritos is probably up there, but I think it's a simple life where you don't have to lie.
I'm also surprised.
I think people are just wrong about money. They're always like, it doesn't buy you happiness. And I'm like, I don't know.
I felt really
great to make enough money to not be like constantly stressed about money. That felt really good, actually.
It is amazing when that weight is off your shoulders. I don't remember that feeling because I think I've lived too long with that feeling to know what it's like to be without it for so long. But it was fun. Like I keep thinking about our time at Lifetime and just like there's moments where I'll go, I think I've told you this, that I'm like, God, Quinn, that was fun, wasn't it?
That was great.
That was fun.
Really living the high life.
We were living a high life, man. We were
living the dream, but for a moment.
Just for a moment. But you know what? Some people never live the dream, not even for a moment.
Right. And some people have 15 minutes of fame, and we had many an hour.
We had, I don't know, fame is, oh my God, somebody was asking me, I did an interview for our show over here, and one of the questions, they had the audacity to ask, when was your big break?
Who the fuck are you?
No, when was your big break?
You were like, what?
I was like, I'm still.
Do you know something I don't?
I'm still fucking waiting for it. Like, I don't know what you're talking about. What's my big break?
That's so funny.
I should have been like.
Such a weird question.
It's such a weird question.
You're like, wait, who do you think I am?
I'm like, is this copy and pasted for the cast of Bridgerton? Like, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Am I in the wrong room?
I think I'm in the wrong room. I think you sent me the wrong Q&A. The Q&A you should have been sending me is height, weight, eye color, hair color.
I'll tell you what room you're in, Carrie. You're in the room of truly.
Darkly. Creepily.
That's Carrie Posner.
And I'm Carrie Abema.
We're here to thank Patreon subscribers.
That's what we're here for.
That's what we do. And the first one's a fun name because it's CCB. CCB, it's a list of letters coming right to you and me. CCB, I love you. I hope you don't get stung by a bee. And if you do, I'll see it and I'll bring you some first aid. I love you, CC.
I'll see you, CC, getting stung by a bee and bring you cortisol cream and Benadryl because that is a CCB.
Let's thank Joe R.
Joe R, Joe R, Joe R, Joe R, Joe R. That kind of sounds fun.
The Dural Jurr. Jor.
Joe R. Wait, let me go. Let me think. Let me actually try to do a new song. Hold on, let me think.
Joe, no. I bet you ain't a hoe. Well, I really don't know, but I bet you ain't a hoe. Joe, how far will this go? This is getting crazy. Joe. Let's have a cup of Joe. Let's have a cup of Joe. I'm sweating so much. It looks like I've had 10. I am pouring sweat.
Well,
I'm trying,
you know what?
To do anything.
Joe R, you are a star. Joe R, you don't go far. Joe R, you have lots of R's in your last name. Joe R.
At least one that we're aware of.
Just one that we're aware of.
What about last one? Let's make it count. This song goes out to Alicia K.
Alicia K. Okay to me, you are not just an okay gal, you're a superstar. Alicia Gay, you will go very, very far. Alicia Gay, do you like ASMR? Because I'm singing you a song and whispering the whole dang song.
It was weird because I couldn't really hear most of the song that you sang. Sometimes your voice went completely out. This'll be an interesting edit in post. Alicia, do you feel cheated? Alicia, feeling defeated? Alicia, we love you. This is the best we could do, and it will have to be good enough, or you can screw right off. And thank you also for joining Patreon.
Thank you so much. Hey, that was good. I'm bummed because I feel like there was some good stuff in my whisper song.
It was crazy because I hope we get it because I couldn't hear a lot of it, but your face was really active where I was like, it looks like
she's
doing
really,
really
great
good.
Work. Yeah. She's doing great work over there.
It looked like great work.
I'm so excited to tell you this story.
I can't wait. No, stop. The sponsors come first, well before you ever get to say it.
Girls got
to
eat. Girl, hey, we need some more burritos. Let's have the sponsors chit chat. Okay. I've been wanting to do this story for a long time when I read this New York Times article that I'm not going to reveal the name of, but it's going to sound very familiar because I've covered a case in the US about this, but this is a case that takes place in Spain. I'm going to be introducing you to Ana Belén Pintado. It is 2017. She is 44 years old and she is the mother to three beautiful little children. And she lives just south of Madrid in a small town, which frankly, so jealous. I love Spain. Spain rules. Mm-hmm. And she's doing the thing. Sadly, she's lost both of her parents. She lost her dad in 2010, and then her mom died 4 years later. And so she's had all of her family stuff, and she's the only child. So she's had all of her parents' stuff like in her garage or in a room, and she's been putting off going through it. But it's 2017, and she decides, you know what? My kids are grown up, or no, they're not grown up. She's 44, but she's like, I have time. I'm going to go through this stuff. So she starts going through her parents' stuff. And her parents ran a bakery. And so she has all these really fond memories of hanging out at the bakery while her mom's selling croissants, and she's going through all their stuff and she's seeing these beautiful memories, like a dress of hers and things like that. And she just comes across these papers. They're part of her mom's medical records. And she sees that her mom was 31 when these records came to be, which is somebody wrote them. So her mom's 31. And she sees that her parents have been together for like 8 years and her mom is trying to start a family. And in these medical records, she sees there are x-rays attached to it, and it indicates a uterine anomaly and obstructed fallopian tubes. And this is weird, right? Because that's mm-hmm. not very easy to have a child if those, right. if that is your diagnosis. The records are dated April 1967, which is 6 years before Anna is born. And she was raised Catholic. Her parents are very devout Catholic people. And she, I think, had this empathy for them because as Catholics, you must have children, you must have children. And to not be able to have kids, there must have been so much shame. So she's writing it off in her head. Her mom probably didn't want to talk about this. This probably was very embarrassing for her. She has no siblings. And then she starts to remember that after her father died, when they were reading his will, a lawyer found some paperwork that had Anna's name on it, but it had a different last name for her. And before she could really investigate it, her mom snatched the document away from the lawyer and wouldn't talk about it. So she's going through these papers and then she finds another document. And this document is a birth certificate showing that her mother had given birth to a baby girl in Santa Cristina Maternity Clinic in Madrid. And it says good appearance and vitality, good coloration. And it's dated July 10th, 1973. And it even includes the room number, room 22. But she could see from this document the top third is ripped off. It's torn at the top. And so she has this moment, she's like, my birth certificate was tampered with. And that's when she had this realization, oh my gosh, maybe I'm a stolen baby. Now, what you need to know about stolen babies is that in Spain in the 1970s, it is under Francisco Franco's control. So Spain, just like a little bit of history, even though Quinn, I know you know this.
I don't like it, but I'll sit through it.
I know you already know this because you're a history expert. In 1936, Spain, before 1936, Spain was a very progressive country, right? So it was a mm-hmm. democratically run country. And overnight, Franco was among a group of military officers who overthrew Spain's government. And overnight, Spain went from a progressive democracy to a regime that would round up and execute leftists and intellectuals. He is a right-wing dictator. At one point, Basque country, which we've heard of their cheesecake and their delicious food, they wouldn't comply with his dictatorship, right? They were like, fuck you, we're not doing it. So he got a bunch of Nazi warplanes to attack and leveled certain parts of Basque country, like Guernica. So like this guy ruled Spain with an iron fist and he would do like horrific things during his dictatorship. He would separate families and move them away because he believed in like a homogenized Spanish culture. So he would like move people away so these different pockets of Spain wouldn't have their own culture. So that's why when I was in Spain, that's just what they told us was like he essentially would, I want to make sure I'm getting this right. So he wanted Spain to have a singular identity. Right, whether it's like bullfighting, flamenco, tapas, even though those three things are from like very certain parts of Spain, he was trying mm-hmm. to create like one cohesive Spain identity. Mm-hmm. And by doing that, he would like move families so that culture couldn't really exist, right? Community couldn't exist. Just like, listen, he's a fucking bad guy. He also stripped away many social freedoms. Like up until the 1930s, Spain was like one of the most progressive countries in Europe. They like allowed women to divorce, which in the 1930s is like a pretty damn big deal. But when he came into power, he was very conservative. Birth control was outlawed. Adultery was criminalized. Women lost the right to vote. Newspapers were censored. Books were banned. It's very conservative. I just want to be very clear when I'm saying all this stuff, it does sound similar to me as the Trump administration, right? Mm-hmm. The fact that birth control is outlawed, like they're trying to ban abortion, books are being banned. This is fascism. So anyway, so this is the 1930s. And their atrocities came down to children, right? So I don't want to say came down to children, that's not right. But their atrocities knew no bounds. During the 1930s and the 1940s, a leading psychiatrist in Spain who had trained in Nazi Germany believed that children who were born to left-wing opponents had what they called a red gene. He said that you could suppress this red gene if you remove the child from their mothers and place them with conservative families where the red gene would not be fed. This is obviously bullshit, and it has its findings in eugenics, so it's super duper fucked. But at that point, they started abducting children. They would first take these orphaned children from people they've executed, from political opponents that they've executed. They would also take children from women in prison who were imprisoned as political prisoners. They would take their children and abduct them and have them raised in conservative families. Around this time also, he starts working with the Catholic Church, and the Catholic Church he gives more power. The Catholic Church is like head of the education system. So they're indoctrinating kids from a young age. They also start to control a lot of the healthcare system, and the healthcare system like takes in poor people, all that stuff. And so the nuns see this as an opportunity. And again, I don't think this psychiatrist who's trying to squash the red gene is necessarily related to this, but it's not unrelated, which is to say mm-hmm. at this time, nuns were seeing this as an opportunity to take children from poor or single mothers and give them to Catholic families to be raised. It's very Georgia Tan. If you remember that story, it's very, very that. So by the 1960s, Spain is open to tourism, and they have more money and the economy is booming and foreigners bring in liberal ideas. And because the economy is booming, women have jobs, and now women have more independence, and so they can raise children as a single mother. So the supply of babies being brought to these conservative families is lowering, right? Mm-hmm. Supply and demand, simple economics. So the nuns, with the help of doctors, nurses, and midwives, began abducting babies from mothers to meet the demand. Sometimes they persuaded mothers to give their children willingly. Some women were sedated and then later told their children had died. This happened primarily in the 60s to 75, maybe 80. So they knew this was going on. After Franco's death, the country passed this like broad amnesty law so they can move on from like the dark ages of Franco's rule. And this law essentially absolved members of some of their most horrific past crimes. So unfortunately, in this changeover from dictatorship to democracy, in the overthrowing of Franco and the overthrowing of the end of this dictatorship, there was never any justice to a lot of the victims of these crimes. These abductions of children were not necessarily granted amnesty through this law, but they had this pact of forgetting, which was trying for everybody to just move on from this. However, again, there was no attempt to right this wrong. There was no attempt to help these children, these mothers, find one another. Mm-hmm. So many people knew of these stories, like Ana Belén Pintada, but it wasn't until she was confronted with her lack of birth certificate and these sort of like clues to her past that she realized, oh my God, I think I am a stolen baby. Nobody knows how many babies are affected.
It'd be so funny if you were like, she wasn't.
Could you imagine?
But isn't that crazy she thought that?
Isn't that crazy? That's my story. They don't know the full number of children, but they think it could be in the tens of thousands of children.
Holy shit. That's wild.
Because of this amnesty law and the pact of forgetting, these people who are discovering that their parents who raised them might not be their biological parents, there's not a lot of ways to find your mother. So she has to do it by herself. Fortunately, there are some foundations and some groups who are like coming together, trying to like get justice, reconnect families right this wrong in some way. She's just, again, like there's not a lot of institutional help for her at this point. So she has to be her own detective. So she starts going to her neighbors, her family, friends, and she's questioning, you know, these people that raised her, this loving family that she was a part of, how much did they know? Did they aid and abet? Did they know, like, what, how much responsibility do they carry in this situation, right? And so she goes to a neighbor, a family friend, and the neighbor remembers when they brought Anna home and they showed her little baby Anna, and her dad got physically angry and he said no one should ever tell Anna she was adopted. And this family friend never brought it up until Anna asked them outright if she was adopted. Anna is married and has three kids, right? Her husband even heard rumors that she was adopted and he never mentioned it to her.
Whoa.
He says he remembers.
It's like the burrito, right, you guys?
It's like the burrito. It's the same thing, the exact same thing. He remembers bringing it up when her mom took those inheritance papers. Like, he was like, that was kind of crazy about your mom. But she has no recollection of this, like none of this. She calls the government in Madrid and she's able to find out that the name of her parents might be Paro Lopez and her parents might be Miguel and Maria. So she has some names. However, unfortunately, Lopez is like a very common name in Spain. It's like one in 50 people have that name.
Yeah.
So again, she's still just like grasping at straws. So she goes and she goes around her little village and she's trying to find out more. And she meets this woman who says that she would get together with her mom every Saturday. And her mom let it slip that when she went to pick up Anna, the nuns told her to put a pillow under your dress like you're pregnant, and that she paid a large amount of money for the adoption. And so Anna's going, okay, were my parents accomplices? Did they know what they were getting into? And then she sees these note cards, these greeting cards in this file and this thing, and she sees that it's from a Catholic nun in Madrid. And Anna has this vague memory of visiting this nun in Madrid, and the name on the letter is Sister Maria Gomez Valbuena. So she starts searching Sister Maria's name on the internet, and she finds that there are many, many, many accusations leveled against this woman, including a story of a mother who said her baby was sold for several thousand dollars. No one, however, as much information as we have at this point, the judges were still carryovers from Franco's regime, and so nobody's going to be bringing them to trial. And also, even after Franco's death, the nuns are still running the hospital. And it's not until 2004 that a socialist wins office. And in 2007, he passes the memory law, which recognizes victims for the first time of the atrocities of the dictatorship, including the people. There are mass graves that families were like, can you please exhume and identify the bodies? I want to know if it's my loved one. And from between 1975 and 2007, they weren't even acknowledged because they were trying to just forget all the bad stuff. There are grassroots organizations like the National Association of Irregular Adoption Victims that was formed. And in 2011, that group files its first lawsuit on behalf of 261 people who claim to be victims of kidnapping, of being a stolen baby, whether it's the mother or the child. Within a month, the number rose to 747. And then they were like, we have to get a handle on this. There's so many more cases. The judges aren't doing anything. Let's just keep adding complaints. The cases ballooned to 2,000 cases. In it, they find a suspect, Eduardo Vela, who was a gynecologist at the time, who would convince women to sign away their babies. He worked directly with Sister Maria Gomez Valbuena, the woman who she found on the greeting card. Mm-hmm. And so they were trying to develop a case around Sister Maria as well. And one of the witnesses was a janitor who worked in the hospital. And she wanted to be anonymous in the article because she was like, I don't want people to know that I worked at this place. But she talked about how Sister Maria would go on the charity floor, which is where a lot of the impoverished or single mothers would go to deliver their babies. And she would call them heathens and subversives. And she would go and just convince them to take their child, or she would say that their child was dead. And there are rumors that she had a baby, a dead baby, preserved in a refrigerator so that she would use it to show mothers that it was their baby.
Oh my God.
The janitor talks about how Sister Maria had a blue book that had the names of prospective parents where she would come in and interview them. And sometimes they would leave with a baby, but they always came with a check. And so she would put how much money they gave her in there. In one case, there was this woman. It's really a fucking scary case. There was this woman who gave birth to twins. They took the twins away and they told her, they tried to convince her that they were up for adoption. And she was like, no, they're not. And she got like a fight at the time. She kept wanting to see her babies. And they're like, sorry, that was some confusion. Sister Mary was like, oh, our bad. There was a little confusion. She went back. The doctor came to her and were like, I'm so sorry. One of your babies died. And she like started sobbing, thinking like, yes, this baby died. And then a little while later, they came in and they're like, I'm sorry, your other baby died. And she's like, whoa, this is fucked up. She went upstairs and she saw them. They were there. And then
holy shit.
They try, like, these are like the things that they were trying to do.
So scary.
Fucking terrifying. And then at one point they like tried to show her the dead babies and she's like, that's not my baby.
Mm-hmm.
It's so like, fucked. Nope. So while they're building this case around Sister Maria, she dies in 2013 at the age of 87 years old without ever formally being charged. The Catholic Church never acknowledges its role in this. And what's really fucked is while these people are trying to sue or trying to get justice for these kidnappings, they're citing the statute of limitations and they're not bringing this case to trial. There are 2,186 cases. None result in a conviction. They cite lack of evidence, statute of limitations, like I just said. So because they're not able to get justice, they're like, we just at least... can we find our families? And mm-hmm. after this, there's like a boom. There's like TV shows reuniting family. Another thing that's really heartbreaking is that there are people who have given birth to stillborn children. And this gives them a sense of hope that maybe their child was abducted and their child is still alive. Mm. And I'll just share one anecdote because it was absolutely heartbreaking, which is there was a woman who had a stillborn in the 90s, well beyond when this practice was happening, and she exhumed her child's grave in the hopes that it was empty. And unfortunately, it was not empty, and they did a DNA test, and it was her baby. But it's like the collective
everyone
trauma.
Everyone having to relive that trauma. Yeah, so
exactly.
Horrible.
It's really horrific. Meanwhile, Anna is still looking for her mother. In 2017, she finds an organization called SOS Stolen Babies who are looking to reconnect. They have over 400 members. They have over 400 members of this organization, but at that point, only about a dozen have found their families. It's very hard to do, especially because all these records, like Sister Maria, when she was alive, was like, "Yeah, some are adopted. You might as well stop looking. Like, you have a family. You're fine." Because she's like, all of our records. There's no way to know, and this is before really DNA becomes big too. They're just like having a huge uphill battle. Like I said, Anna knows her mother's last name is Lopez. Again, 1 in 50 people have Lopez as their last name. So she just writes these letters and she sends them to every Lopez. And I'm going to read you her letter that she wrote. She says, I am Anna Boleyn. I am writing because I am looking for my biological family. Just by chance, I have found your name and address. I am a stolen baby. I'm desperate to find my family. And I'm asking you if by any chance in your family, there were ever suspicious about this issue, please write to me, even if it's not the case, so I can eliminate people as it's been hard work and I've spent a lot of time searching. I'm sorry to bother you and for this coming out of the blue, but at this time, I've got no other leads. Sincerely, Anna Boleyn. Then she finally gets a break. She gets a call from the office in Madrid and she finds out her mother's name is not Maria, but it's Pilar. And she is from Avila, a place called Avila. So at this point, she's like, okay, have some more information. However, her like cousins and aunts and uncles are becoming increasingly critical of her. They're like, I just wish you came to us first. And they're like, how your parents really loved you. How could you do this to them? Blah, blah, blah. And she's like, I'm just trying to fucking find my biological parents if this is what happened to me. So in 2008, she gets a phone call from a guy. And he says he is an intimate friend of a woman named Pilar Villora Garcia. and she is someone who lost around she and she is someone who lost a child around the same time that Anna was born. And would you like her number? So she takes down her number and she calls right away. A woman answers and is like, let me call you back. 5 minutes later, the woman calls back and they're like, all right, let's compare notes. The delivery date, the birth date matches. Okay. The city, they're both in Madrid, matched. The maternity clinic that they're in, that matched. The only thing that doesn't match is that the clinic or the government entity that is talking to Anna is like, your mother was 23. Pilar is saying that she was 24. So Anna calls the government back, and at this point they have more information, and they're like, actually, her name is Pilar Viota Garcia. So Anna calls this woman right back, and she goes, I know who my mother is, and it's you. They meet for the first time in 2018, just 3 months after that first call. And when they get near one another, Pilar just starts like running to Anna, and they're hugging and crying. And over dinner, Pilar tells Anna her whole life story. She says that she met her husband and they married young, and she had two children, Jose Luis and Francisco. And then the next year she was pregnant for a third time, and she was hoping it would be a girl. And July 9th, 1973, she started having contractions, and she said it was a really easy birth. And the baby was taken away, and Pilar remembers that as Anna was taken away, they put an anesthesia mask on Pilar, and she remembers crying while it's happening. And she woke up, and they told her it was a stillborn, and she just believed them. They said they would take care of the body and the remains and everything. She never knew they lied, so she never went searching. Mm. In all of this stolen baby stuff, she never knew. So,
ugh, so devastating.
It's horrifying. And Anna talked before she found her family, how alone she felt. She was an only child. She had these parents who both died, and she felt super alone. And overnight, she found her mother. She's met her biological father. She now has two siblings. She's found her family. I will say the one thing that she is missing is justice, and she is trying to get justice. She is looking for the man, this guy, Jose Maria Castillo Diaz, the doctor who delivered her and signed the paperwork for her adoption. And so she hired a lawyer and she filed a case against him. But he died before the trial could go. And she just is left totally devastated because she's like, I just want the world to know the facts. I found my mother, my father, my brothers in record time, and we get on great. We talk every day sometimes, but I just need justice. I'm going to leave this quote by Anna. We lost 45 years and you can't get those back. But when I see my mother now, it's like looking at a girl with new shoes. She tells everyone she sees in the street, they stole my daughter, but now we've found each other.
Aww, I'm glad that they did.
I totally. The New York Times article.
It's a happy ending-ish, sort of.
I know, because there's so many people.
You can't get that time back.
And there's so many people who never found their family. But I do want to say the New York Times article that I got it from is called Taken Under Fascism, Spain's Stolen Babies Are Learning the Truth by Nicholas Casey. And it's an incredible article.
Great. And now a word from our sponsors. I'm glad we're back because David Law, one of our Patreonis on Instagram, made me aware of this case that I'm going to tell you about today. And I got my information from BBC, Northern Ireland World, The Guardian, and Belfast Live. Colin Howell is a religious guy that goes to school to be a dentist at Queen's University, and he meets lovely Leslie, who he will marry because she's studying to be a nurse in Belfast. They get married in 83. Fun fact, that's the year I was born. And they have four kids. They go to church. He's kind of a preacher and a dentist preacher, if you will, or if you won't, because that is what he is. And it is the evening of her son's second birthday. She has like a baby, a kid that's turning two this night, a four-year-old and a six-year-old. So they have all these kids. And the day after this kid's birthday, Colin is like, this is so weird. My wife left in the middle of the night. Basically, a really crazy thing happened where she and this guy from our community, Trevor Buchanan, came to the house. Trevor and I had a fight. I hit my head. My wife was upset and went to bed on the sofa. But when I woke up, she wasn't there. There was a note that was like very upsetting. And I think she had been drinking and taking a lot of pills. Like, I'm really worried she got into a car accident or something. So he's talking to people from his church about this and being like, what should we do? Like, it's really weird that my wife is gone. And there was this kind of kerfuffle last night that led to her leaving. Will you go check? Because her dad died 2 weeks ago. Will you just go to his house? Because no one's in it, but maybe she went there. I don't know. And his church elder does not find anyone there. And then he urges him to go back again. So he goes with another guy who's actually an off-duty police officer. And they end up finding her there. And she's dead.
Is she alive? Oh, God.
Yeah, she's dead. And what has happened is she and the guy who he got in the fight with, Trevor, have died of carbon monoxide poisoning. It appears to be a joint suicide where Trevor's in the front seat, she's in the trunk, she has headphones on where she's listening to music, and there's pictures of her family all around her, and they both died of carbon monoxide poisoning. And basically, Colin's like, here's the thing. I was having an affair with Trevor's wife, Hazel, and that was what the fight was about. They both knew. They were both really upset about it, and I think that they both couldn't deal with it. And so Leslie is dead at 31 years old. Trevor Buchanan, who's was constable, is dead at 32. I'm not going to like unravel the mystery at a slow rate. I'm going to tell you that it's Colin Howell is the murderer.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm going to tell you what actually happened is that he and Hazel had like an on again, off again, and then he wanted to be with her and was like, I basically just need my wife dead and her husband dead. Easy enough. What I just mentioned that it's the 2-year-old's birthday because I'm just like, wow.
That's guy, insane.
You need to kill this kid's mom tonight. Amazing. So at his house, his wife had been upset because she knew about the affair. That's accurate. She was drinking. She was taking prescription pills because she was upset. She was sleeping on the sofa. He goes out to their car and uses a garden hose, attaches it to the exhaust, uses a baby's bottle, cuts it in half, and puts the hose inside of it, runs it through their utility room, through their kitchen, to his wife on the couch, puts on the engine, and stands like at the living room door, like watching. And she wakes up like confused because she's being poisoned. And she calls out for her son, her eldest, who's 6, Matthew. She's like, Matthew. And all these kids are asleep in the house. And he runs in and pulls a duvet over her face, pushes the hose into her face, and like, holds her down till she dies.
Oh, my God.
Then she's in PJs. Then he dresses her in a shirt and leggings and throws on her sneakers, puts her in his trunk. All 4 of his kids are asleep. He leaves. He puts a bike on top of her in the trunk. And he goes and drives over to Hazel and Trevor's house. And he does the same exact thing to Trevor. The same method.
Where's Hazel?
And again, I don't know the answer to that. I do know that Trevor wakes up and sees him and that they fight. And he had to account for that by saying they had this scuffle because
he has bruises and stuff, yeah.
And he has like this moment where he's like, am I going to be able to get this guy? Because he's like a big guy. And he somehow traps him in a quilt. And it's the same thing. He like gets the hose inside the quilt. But he got so dizzy during the scuffle because all of the carbon monoxide. So he, as soon as he's killed Trevor, he runs out of the house to get air.
Oh, my God.
He goes back in. He dresses Trevor. He puts him in the car. He drives to the dad's house, who's dead, in Castle Rock, stops on the way and drops his bike like near a nature area that he's going to come back for, goes to the dad's house and goes to the garage, puts on gloves and stages the whole scene.
This is all then so he has to stage it
where he's like he's carbon monoxide poisoning them. Like he has to set it up like they're being poisoned, and he burns evidence, gets his bike, bikes home. And then the next day is like, where's my wife? That was so weird. We had a fight. Now, this was a crazy case because of how many things the police missed. And I'm going to tell you what those things were. He kept calling people and being like, you guys should go to that house in Castle Rock, dad's house. Like he kept saying it, which is such a weird thing to say. And then nobody would find them. And he'd be like, are you sure? Like, what? That is so crazy. And nobody's like asking why they should look.
Why does
he
know?
Why do you want us to go to that guy's house?
Why do you know? You should
have
known.
If you really looked at the photographs that she had that she was supposed to be looking at as she died in the trunk, like some of them weren't even pointed correctly at her face. Why did she have a bunch of photographs, but
he didn't?
Trevor's taller than him and he didn't readjust the seat. So if you like look at how Trevor's in the car, he's like barely in there, like his legs like sticking out awkwardly. It's like, it's very staged. It's very awkward. Leslie doesn't even have her sneakers all the way on. She was meant to have climbed into the trunk herself. Her sneakers half off. That's fucking weird. And if there was a joint suicide pact, why is she in the trunk and he's up front? That's super fucking weird. Also, Trevor has marks on his body, which I guess the idea that he has like some blood on the back of his head and all this stuff is like, oh, well, there was a fight. And that's why my head has a gash too, which actually Trevor gave him when they had this struggle. They, you know, are interviewing Hazel and Colin about the affair, and the police are noting inconsistencies. They're noting that they're being lied to, but they just think they're being lied to about the affair. They don't, like, push.
Was Hazel a part of this?
We'll get to her day in court.
Okay.
So, people are like, oh, Leslie told us that she thought her husband was trying to medicate her. And they don't investigate that. There are also rumors where they're like, and a weird thing happened a few weeks ago where Colin threw an electric cable into the tub while Leslie was taking a bath. And you're like, what? It's so crazy. And he was having all these like financial problems and that he would have benefited from. And later when you realize what happened, you go back and look at the suicide note and it's not her writing. There's inconsistencies in the grammar and stuff like this that it doesn't seem like she obviously wrote this note.
Oh my God.
So it's so much stuff that they overlooked, so much stuff that they were like, just took it at first glance. But after this murder happened, and the reason we know that he committed it is this. So at first, everything was solved for him. He was able to pay off all these debts and his dental practice was like, boom. He had their life insurance. He had the dad's house because that was like left to her and then left to him. And he sold it for like $130,000. But then... This is so wild. He gets remarried. He has a bunch of kids with his new wife. He tells her at some point, I killed my wife. Like, I don't know when, but like he tells
her. What date is, just asking for a friend, what date is the date you reveal that?
I mean, after five kids. I think it's like when it's locked in.
Is it like 10th wedding anniversary? Is like 10 and an admission of guilt?
What's so wild is he then loses nearly $500,000 in a Philippine scam. There's like a scheme that's like, we're going to uncover some gold that's been hidden by the Japanese and you just need to invest in it.
Stop.
And it's, what's crazy is that his lawyer, when he's like going to trial for this murder, will be like, okay, but don't, this was so dumb that he did this. It's so obviously fraud that I argue that Colin wanted his life to absolutely destruct. He wanted his whole life to crumble.
What is the thing that we covered, which was like, you're too stupid to know you're bad at something? I covered it a while ago, but it's like that feeling of like, it's almost like that. He thinks he's so, his confidence, people's confidence will make them seem like there's, oh God.
But there is this idea that he was trying to hurt himself because he couldn't believe he'd gotten away with it. Also in the case, they're like, oh, well, he really was trying to relieve their pain. No, he wasn't trying to relieve Trevor's pain. Trevor had two kids. Like, he took these parents away from all these children. It's so wild. And then what ends up happening that is the straw that breaks the camel's back and Colin's heart is that in 2007, Matthew, that his wife, she called out Matthew. He's 22 now. He's a student at St. Andrews University and he's abroad. He's doing an overseas semester in St. Petersburg in Russia. He's killed when he falls down a 40-foot stairwell. He dies. And when he dies, Colin is like, it's because of me. It's the sins revisited. And I think it might be at that point that he tells his wife, who he's like, his wife, Kyle, he's like, I killed my wife. And then it's been 2 years after Matthew dies. He goes into his church and he like tells the elders, he's like, I totally like killed my wife and Trevor. And they're like, ooh, okay, you really do need to like go to the police. You like have to tell them. And he's like, okay. So like take him to the police and he's like, police.
So the only reason he is because he confesses?
Yeah. So he comes forward and he's like, I did this.
Oh my God.
He said to them, I know I lived in a world of believing I could do anything, like a fantasy world where I could do anything. And so I probably believed I could do it and get away with it. And he did. I mean, he really did get away with it. And there's this guy that's been following it named a journalist named Derek Henderson, who's writing a book about it. And he says about Colin, Colin Howell was in love with himself in many ways. He was narcissistic. Colin Howell lived in a world that was not familiar to you or me or anybody else. He was a fantasist in many ways. And it does sound like that because even after he does this, Kyle leaves him. She divorces him and like moves with the kids. And he writes her a letter that says, you must either write to me to clean the slate or now acknowledge I have done everything possible to be truthful and honest. And now set yourself free to forgive. He's basically like such a fucking asshole.
How to where fucking it's
like,
feel.
Kyle, you really need to forgive me. And it's like, I really don't, like, is the truth. Nobody needs to forgive him. And no one should. And at trial, these kids get to read these impact statements about missing their father their whole life, missing their mother their whole life. And
oh my God,
not to mention, like, his wife's brother and, like, being like, I lost my sister and I thought she... The idea that all these kids grew up thinking their parents committed suicide is, like, another layer of it. Yeah. Not even, like, they were just gone. They thought their parents killed themselves. He's given a 20-year minimum prison sentence. And then Hazel's gotten remarried to someone else. She became Hazel Stewart. She pleads not guilty. And he basically is in jail but getting to come out whenever he wants to talk about Hazel and, like, be part of the case. And he's like, well, our secret love affair began when we met at a pool and our children were having swimming lessons and we had a blood pact. We were going to do this. And she had a secret abortion of my child, actually. And I'd actually made my wife get abortions before. I'm a maniac. And she was a total willing piece of this puzzle. Like, she absolutely was part of the plot. And to a point where we were like, how much drugs should we use? And in a weird foreplay thing, I like drugged her in my dentist chair, and then when she was passed out, I had sex with her. Like, it was like a turn on for them that they were gonna murder their spouses. And for her part, she's like, no, I was so scared of him. I just didn't want to be a victim. I was just forced to help him. I was forced to dispose of the pipes, and I was just scared he would hurt my children, so I never said anything. And the jury's like, no, that's not what happened. You're guilty.
Do you believe her?
And no, I don't believe her. I think she's
just as guilty
a selfish
as he
person.
Is.
I think she's guilty. She's going to serve a life sentence. And just if you were curious about Colin Howell, in addition to being an absolute asshole double murderer, in May of 2011, he also pled guilty to sexually assaulting 9 of his female patients by basically putting them under and messing with them. And so he was also stripped of his National Health Service pension.
Oh,
also,
phew.
Here's a really interesting post note to the case as well. So the woman that he killed, his wife, Leslie, mm-hmm. her brother is like, hold up. My dad, like, our dad died real suddenly. And he died 2 weeks before this went down, emptying that house and making it so that in addition to whatever money,
oh,
he got
shit.
The house. and he was not an unhealthy guy. And he's like, I really, really think Colin fucking killed my dad, because they didn't do autopsy, a postmortem. They were like, this is heart failure. He died 11 days before Leslie died.
And the amount of planning he had, that's...
So I haven't read anything about him being charged with that. I don't know that they could prove it, but the brother's like, you did it. You killed my whole fucking family. You killed my sister. You killed my dad.
Oh, my God.
What a case.
What an insane case.
What a case.
Hey, David Law, living up to the name. Thank you.
Thanks, David Law.
Holy shit. Wow.
If you have a really interesting case like David did, feel free to send it. Sometimes I read all about the cases you guys send me. Sometimes I forget even what inbox they were in. Was it Patreon? Was it Instagram? Did someone email us?
Yeah, I do too.
But a lot of times we remember. So give it a whirl. But also make it really good.
Make it worth your time. No pressure.
No pressure. No pressure. No pressure. Do my job. No pressure. No pressure. No pressure. No pressure. I love you.
Love you. Love you. No pressure. No pressure. Pressure. Leave us a review. No pressure. No pressure. No pressure.
No pressure. Pressure. Pressure.
Like, join Patreon. No pressure. No pressure. No pressure. Pressure. Join Patreon again. Join pressure. 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 Goodbye.
Bye.